You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Our words of wisdom are from Matthew chapter 22, verses 37 through 40, and a reading from Marcus Borg. From Matthew, Jesus said, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the greatest and first commandment. And a second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets."
From Meeting Jesus Again for the First Time by Marcus Borg. One of the hallmarks of Jesus' teachings was his pointed attacks on the purity system. This was the dominant theme in the Jewish social world during his time, and it was focused on creating a world with sharp social boundaries between pure and impure, righteous and sinner, whole and not whole, male and female, rich and poor, Jew and Gentile.
Jesus deliberately replaced the core value of purity with compassion. Jesus saw the divinity in all people, and he challenged everyone to see the good, the God self, in all people with whom they associated.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Hey, it's Christmas Sunday, so it must be time for another amazing Steve Burt story. Steve was a seminary professor and pastor with a gift for storytelling who now writes full-time. On previous Christmas Sundays, we've heard his Thumb Island Elephant story, Perfect, Just Perfect, and a couple of years ago, The Blessing Bell. All are from his wonderful little collection, A Christmas Dozen. This year, Steve takes us to a small town in Maine, where a group of best friends end up making an otherwise uneventful nativity play into an expression of what really matters in life. This is One Maine Christmas.
Whoa now, hold it. Pearly, DJ, James, stop horsing around back there. We're down to two practices before the nativity pageant, and I want us to get it right.
Mr. Gamage, the Sunday school superintendent, had a way of getting order without yelling. It was a gift he had. Now he stood at an easel and wrote on a pad with a magic marker that was going dry.
"Pearly Alley," Mr. Gamage said, "would you please go to the Sunday school cabinet and get me a fresh magic marker? There's a new package on the top shelf."
Pearly was back in a flash, handing the magic marker to Mr. Gamage, who thanked him and continued on.
"Okay, one more walkthrough, and we can call it a day. Places, everyone! Mary, Joseph, angels, shepherds, wise guys, lights, camera, action!"
James, Pearly, and DJ walked home together from the church. James hardly spoke.
"What's the matter, James?" DJ asked. "You're like my sister when she didn't get asked to the prom."
James was glad to have these two friends. DJ and Pearly meant a lot to him because acceptance had been slow in coming since he'd arrived on the Cove. He didn't know if it was because he was the new kid in school or because he was the only black kid, the only black person in this Maine coastal village. His dad was the new preacher, and they had been in the parsonage barely 5 months. James had been adopted at 4 months, and now that he was 10, he'd been experiencing a gnawing, something more than a simple curiosity, to learn about his history and to claim his black heritage. With that gnawing came a sense of alienation, of differentness. Although no one mistreated him, James was painfully aware that he was the solitary black in a coastal village made up of generation upon generation of white lobstermen, white loggers, and white blueberry rakers. Yeah, James, Pearlie added, curly red hair unmoving in the breeze. What's bugging you? James looked at his freckled, pale-faced friend, hesitant to answer. Well, DJ pressed, his long blonde hair rippling like corn silk across his eyebrows. He swept at it futilely. Something's up, James. This ain't you.
I don't know, James answered, realizing his friends had caught him sleepwalking. Guess I must be homesick for our last home. That was only a half lie. He did miss the friends he'd had back when his dad had been a seminary student. Between seminary families and the kids he'd known in elementary school, he'd had quite a few friends, several of whom were black children. Maybe it's because it's close to Christmas, James added, smiling weakly. His two friends let him drop the subject, and the three of them split up for home. The next day at practice, everybody walked through their parts as Mr. Gamage narrated the script for the pantomime Nativity. Each actor listened closely for cues. And while they were there, the time came for Mary to be delivered. And she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling cloths and laid him in a manger because there was no place for them in the inn. DJ, playing Joseph, watched as Mary, whose name really was Mary, placed the swaddled doll in a crib of weathered lobster trap slats, which Mr. Gamage had filled with straw. Tears streamed down James' cheeks, shining like silver ski tracks on his dark skin. DJ motioned Pearlie to look, and the two of them stared at James. Nothing was said until the three of them were walking home. What was that all about? Asked DJ. What was what about? Asked James. We saw you, Pearlie said. Saw me what? James said sharply. Pearlie and DJ backed away, staring at a red-faced James. I don't think anybody else saw, Pearlie said. James relaxed his hunched shoulders. I'm not exactly sure what happened, he said. The three of them continued walking. Must have been something, said DJ. Come on, you can tell us, Pearlie said. We're your best friends, ain't we, James? They stopped walking, and James stared blankly out on the blue-green waters of the cove, then up at the slate-gray sky. He pondered the question and the trust level. Pearlie's soft brown eyes were as inviting as a pile of raked autumn leaves. James let his breath out loudly, not realizing he'd been holding it. With the outrush of breath came the loosening of his tongue. It was that story, he said. What story? Asked DJ. You know, Mr. Gamage's story. I think he means the baby Jesus story, interrupted Pearlie. Right, James? Yeah, James answered. I could feel it. The alone feeling of being in a strange town. It made me feel sad. Being all alone like that, in that manger, it must have been terrible lonely for the baby. But he had parents, James, DJ said. Pearlie simply listened. I bet they were lonely too, countered James. They didn't know anybody. Silence. DJ was finally at a loss for words. You feel lonely, James? Asked Pearlie. A foghorn moaned beyond the cove. Lots, James said. Silence again, and the foghorn. But ain't we your friends? DJ asked. Yeah, James said, but what? Snapped DJ. Pearlie waited. But, James said, I'm black. Again the foghorn. We know that, James, said DJ. It's not exactly something you can hide around here, is it? It's a small town. Newcomers stand out. Besides, what's being black got to do with it? Pearlie listened as James tried to explain it to DJ. I'm the only black person in this entire place, including my parents, who are white. Don't you see? You've always been here, always been a part of things. You don't know what it's like to be different or lonely. It's just not the same for me. It's very different. DJ shook his head, yes, even though he didn't really understand. And Pearlie said nothing. Pageant night arrived, and the church overflowed with parents and grandparents eager to watch the young actors recreate the story of the first Christmas. James' father flitted among the people, shaking hands, smiling, inviting people to Sunday morning services. The children giggled nervously as they took their places. James's father offered an opening prayer. Mr. Gamage made the introductions and praised the kids for their hard work, then thanked the parents for helping with the costumes. The drama began. Shepherd's staffs clunked the floor loudly as they marched in. Angels burst out from behind the old upright piano, tinfoil wings snagging other angels' halos. Mr. Gamage stumbled over the name Quirinius, which he'd always gotten right in practice, this time adding a syllable and pronouncing it Quininridrius. Otherwise, things proceeded without a hitch. DJ and Mary trekked down the center aisle, leading their cardboard donkey, arriving at the Bethlehem manger. The betrothed couple, Mary bulging with pillow, knelt behind the straw-filled lobster trap crib. The organist played We Three Kings of Orient Are as the three wise men arrived via the side aisle bearing their gold, frankincense, and myrrh. James walked second in the caravan, typecast as a shining black Abyssinian prince carrying his gift. The three wise men approached the manger crib and fell to their knees before the newborn king. When the last gift was laid down, the entire cast leaned forward as Mary drew back the swaddling cloths that covered the baby. But the other children's eyes weren't on the Christ child. They were on James, who knelt staring, open-mouthed, into the crib. After a moment, he turned his face up toward them and managed a tight-lipped grin. Tears welled up in his eyes. He looked into the manger crib again, just to be certain. And yes, he'd seen correctly. The Bethlehem babe lay there all right, but this doll was different from the one that he'd seen at practice, for this one's plastic body shone black, streaked and smeared and carefully colored in black magic marker. DJ leaned forward and whispered, James, looks like you're not the only black kid in this town anymore. As he said it, he and Pearlie each placed a hand beside James on the edge of the crib. The lump in James' throat wouldn't let him swallow, try as he might. That's when he saw the black stains on DJ's and Pearlie's fingertips, magic marker stains from their small hands gripping the markers in pencil fashion too near the tip. You're right, James whispered back hoarsely, nodding towards his two friends' fingers on the crib. Counting Jesus, there's four of us. At least four, Pearlie said, which was when the other children leaned in and laid their writing hands on the crib. Each hand's fingertips were stained black from gripping, pencil fashion,
too near the tip, what had been left in Mr. Gamage's box of Sunday school markers. James couldn't help but break into a broad grin. Cameras flashed, and the cast stood to take its bows. People who remember say that that year's pageant was the best ever for pictures. I'll have to admit, I was hesitant to share this story at first. Fear over awkward questions about the appropriateness of a blackface Jesus filled my mind. But then I unjerked my knee and thought, hang on a second. This story has nothing to do with the ugly, mocking tradition of blackface and everything to do with compassionate acceptance and inclusion of those who feel left out. If there's anything that I've tried to instill in my kids as they've grown up is the importance of accepting and including others, especially those who would otherwise be excluded. And when you come right down to it, that's pretty much one of my main soapbox themes as a pastor, too. Whether it's the acceptance and embrace of non-Christians, the affirmation and inclusion of our LGBTQ brothers and sisters, or confronting the ongoing challenge of racism in our culture. The Fountains has been a beacon of acceptance and inclusion for many. In our Matthew passage today, Jesus reminds us of the centrality of loving our neighbor as ourself. And Marcus Borg reminds us that Jesus saw the divinity in all people, and he challenged everyone to see the good, the God self, in all people. So in our in-person celebration today, we'll be sending everyone home with a reminder of that call, inspired by our story today, a magic marker. But we're not limiting ourselves to one color. We've got over 100 different colors to remind us of the diversity and beauty of all of God's children. In the end, the message we have to offer as followers of Jesus, and the message that a hurting world is longing to hear, is that we're not alone. The traditional message of Christmas is that Jesus was meant to bridge a perceived separation between humans and the divine. And we're called to live out that connection every day. So here's to staying on the lookout for the excluded and the lonely, and as followers of Jesus, letting them know that we and they aren't alone. Merry Christmas.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information, or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.